Welcome to Ujiria, broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios. Ujiria is a Greek word meaning health of body and mind in aging individuals. Ujiria Radio is a weekly show celebrating the heroes that contribute to the Ujiria of our elderly and disabled population. Now joining us in the studio are your hosts, Sam Grass and Brad Culp.
Good morning. This is Brad. I've got Sam and Kevin with me. It's July 1st, and good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
How are you today, Brad?
I'm doing well. I'm getting excited for the soccer game at 4 o'clock this afternoon.
I know. Sam and I were talking about that before the show started, and he just can't get into soccer.
Yeah, you know, I will say I'm not a huge fan outside of, you know, but I can say that about a lot of sports, you know, outside of the big tournaments, you know, I'm just not going to turn on a Braves game, you know, but when they get to the playoffs, I'm going to watch it. And I have to say, it's been pretty exciting. So I think you're just not paying attention, Sam.
I don't understand it, and it's low scoring, so I'm bored.
It is a complex game. You know, you've got this ball that you try and kick into the net, and I can see why that confuses you.
Brad, I was educated in West Virginia, remember?
All right, well, enough of that. We have a good show for you this morning. We have a return guest, Fiona Middleton. Fiona was with us 2 years ago when we were celebrating the 20th anniversary of Griswold Home Care in Atlanta and our 30th anniversary. Fiona, glad I got that out of the way. But Fiona spent a good bit of her career with Griswold Home Care, really was there from the early days and helped define who Griswold Home Care was. And so it was certainly an important part of our history. Fiona has more than 20 years of experience working with business owners and senior management teams. And really, in particular, her specialty is customized coaching and training programs to help companies obtain their best results. And she did that for Griswold Home Care, and then she left Griswold about 5 years ago, Fiona?
Yeah, 2010, so, yep, 4 years.
Hard to believe it's been that long. But when she left, she created Fairfield Business Solutions, of which she's continues to be the president. She's a frequent guest speaker at conferences and industry functions, and I'm going to let Fiona talk a lot more about what she does and how she does it, but by way of introduction, that's it. And we have a little bit different show this morning. We are often talking about services and people that serve the senior community, and a good many of our listeners fall into that category. We certainly have listeners that are caregivers and that are clients and seniors and families of seniors. But we have a good many listeners that provide services in the senior industry. And so today we're going to take a little bit different spin on the show. And we're going to talk about two things. We're going to talk about, for the providers that are listening, we're going to talk about the message and how you deliver a credible and valuable message in a pretty cluttered environment. And then on the flip side, we're going to talk a little bit about how, as a consumer of senior services, how do you cut through the clutter and identify what a company's real message is and what their real value is that you can so that you can make a comparison. So with that, let me turn it over to you, Fiona. And if you wouldn't mind, just start. I know I gave you an introduction, but remind our listeners kind of a little bit about where you're from and where you went to school and how you ended up doing what you're doing today.
Absolutely. Hi, Brad. Hi, Sam. It's so nice. And Kevin, it's so nice to be on the show again and part of the message that you're getting out. So I am from the Philadelphia area, although I'm fairly well traveled throughout the United States. I spent about 20 years just visiting, and I still visit clients in different parts of the country. and I get down to Atlanta every once in a while, never enough in my mind. My professional background, educational-wise, I have a master's degree in management with concentrations in training and leadership. And I actually teach a little bit at Rosemont College, which is one of our local colleges. Most people know the school in our backyard, which is Villanova University. We're right next door to them. And I've taught some courses there in marketing and advertising and communications, and right now on business ethics. But I spend most of my time either speaking or coaching organizations and helping them to reach out to their clients. And most of the companies that I work with provide services to older people. So it could be home care, senior living, adult day, care managers. The common thread is that the majority of them are helping the folks who are listening to your show, Brad.
Excellent. So tell me, reminding our listeners, you spent a good bit of your career at Griswold Home Care. And during the course of that time, you wore a lot of hats. If you wouldn't mind just telling us a little bit about what it was about that experience that kind of made it possible for you to launch Fairfield Business Solutions, and then, give us kind of the synopsis of Fairfield Business Solutions.
Sure, I'd love to. Prior to Griswold, my career was always in sales and marketing. I spent many, many years. It was a wonderful experience because when I started with the company, it was 9 years old, and really not only was Griswold not on the map, but home care in general, non-medical home care, was just not really common. It was pretty hard to find a company doing that. In fact, I can remember our early years, we spent most of our time just explaining to people what this whole concept of non-medical home care is. And as we know today, it's become this huge thriving industry, and most area markets have dozens, if not over 100 different home care companies. So the exciting part was just really kind of helping to shape that industry. And one of the things I always tell people is writing the first training course for the first franchise to do non-medical home care in the U.S., I literally wrote the book on home care. But when I left there, I went to another market, I went to a marketing company, and we focused on helping senior living communities, worked with adult day centers there, assisted living, independent living, and then since then, of course, have really expanded that into some of those other areas. So well over 20 years working with these kinds of companies.
Excellent. So what you and I talked about prior to the show was that this was going to be kind of educational, and we certainly want people to know about your business and to look to you as a resource. But we're going to do that kind of by talking about a particular topic. And so by way of introduction, in our conversation, one of the comments you made is that the fact that people that are looking for services today use a different process than even just a few years ago. So with that, why don't you introduce the topic and let me just let you run with it.
Okay, I'll do that. And just stop me if I go on too much. I'm definitely a talker. But what's interesting is that there's kind of a myth out there that older people aren't online. And today, more than half of people in this country over 65 are online, and 32% of people in that age group are using social media. And I always use my mother as an example. My mom's in her late 70s and really doesn't drive a whole lot anymore. In fact, won't go more than 2 or 3 miles beyond where she lives, maybe 5 miles. But she can find a florist that's just a couple miles away from my aunt over in Scotland. And she's doing that online. And we're, she's still definitely on that learning curve and at that point where she still enjoys to get emails. You remember back when we used to like getting email when it was brand new. For many people who are kind of just discovering the internet right now and discovering all the things that it can do, it's expanding their ability to find products and services and providers. And certainly some of
I was going to say, what's driving seniors to get online?
Well, I think there's a couple things, Brad, and I think part of it is just the convenience factor. And again, if you think back, somebody who really didn't get out and drive much before they could get online, they were really dependent on catalog shopping and, you know, their mailboxes. I don't even want to think about the amount of trees that were killed just to get all those catalogs out. And it was kind of a lengthy process. If you're say, looking for an appliance, and you have to go through 6 different catalogs for it. Now, we, of course, can just go online. You do a search, and you have hundreds of websites at your fingertips. The downside of that is you've just got almost an overwhelming amount of information. So sorting through and finding exactly what you're looking for can be a bit of a challenge. But our older adults, our older population, does a much better job, I think, than people give them credit for.
Yeah, it's interesting, too. It's close to 2 years now. About 2 years ago, I bought my first iPad. And, I was kind of late to the game, but I couldn't think of a good reason to own one until we got to the point where we believed that we could start doing business on the iPad. And so we started doing all our paperwork for our clients on the iPad. And I had clients actually signing on the iPad. And when I started this, Sam told me that I would never get my 80, 90-year-old clients to sign on the iPad. And I've literally done hundreds of them, and never, not once, has somebody refused to sign. So, you know, I do think that our seniors are embracing technology. I think for those that may have been reluctant, the other driving factor is the kids. Because the kids, even the kids that are in their 60s now with their parents in their 80s and 90s, you know, they've been using email in their work for the last 10 or 15 years, and everybody's phone is now internet capable, and so I think that the kids, even the 60-year-old kids, are pushing their parents to become connected so that they can stay connected with their parents.
Absolutely, and actually, when you talk about social media, right now in that 50 to 64-year-old range, more than half of people in that age group are using social media. And when you look at that, I think it's something like 70-some percent of all adults, period, are on Facebook. So I was actually doing a search on Google a couple weeks ago. I was looking for, fold out that. I have some unexpected company coming over, and I wanted to make sure I had enough beds. And the next night I was on Facebook and scrolling through all of my newsfeed, and here and there was an advertisement for the same kind of beds that I had been looking for. So, you know, Google with its algorithms and Facebook and a lot of these other sites, they've gotten really smart, and we don't realize that there's a lot of information being captured, and you can actually harness that as a provider, and when you know somebody's looking for something, be able to actually have information that is relevant to them. And for me, it was the first time I really saw an ad on Facebook that it was just so directly targeted, and I was so interested. Mm. And of course, I clicked on the site and did some shopping. So it's amazing what we can do.
So certainly, you know, for me, I'm not yet 60, but in my 50s, and my go-to is whenever I want any kind of product or service is my phone or my iPad. I'm not going to look at the phone book. I'm certainly going to talk to people about who they would recommend, but it's just so natural to pick up the phone or the iPad and just start browsing. So I'm sure I'm not the only one. In fact, I'm sure that everybody from, you know, age 60 on down to teenagers is kind of in the same boat. So given that, how does that change how we as service providers in the senior industry market our services?
Yeah, well, it's actually changed everything. So again, that old paradigm, if somebody needed care, and I'm talking now really about need-driven services, so perhaps care managers or adult day or home care or assisted living, where people have that kind of immediate need. There's been something's happened, a fall or some hospitalization, and people are looking for care. Those clients, those or patients before, were 100% dependent on that professional healthcare professional. So the case manager in the hospital or the social worker, or they were the keeper of all the resources. And what that meant is, from a marketing and a sales perspective, most need-driven companies, we all counted on each other to refer those clients back and forth. And we should still do that. I mean, that hasn't changed. I think, you know, so much of our healthcare system is built on relationships and referrals. But what has happened now is that prospect who's looking really isn't limited to a little list that's given to them by a hospital, or sometimes a really big list. And they're, you know, they can actually get online and say, okay, I need care for mom, or I want home care for mom. And they're going to be doing these searches online. So today, if you don't spend some time as a company making sure you've got a really good presence, you're just going to get lost in the shuffle. And what's worse is if you have a poor presence is bad because people can't find you. But because the tools are out there, consumers now have the ability to put in reviews and put up websites that are negative. So if somebody has a bad experience and they put that up online, it is almost impossible that you can't get rid of it. Google won't take it down. So the best you can do is get enough content out there that you push it, you know, down so it's on page 2 or 3 or 4 of Google. The problem is think about what the last time you went out to dinner to a new restaurant. The first thing you probably did was go online and type in the name of the restaurant to see what kind of reviews were up there. And when people see a negative review, it's our human nature. We click on it and say, wow, what was that? So the best way to protect yourself or build what I call a firewall is to really make sure that you've got really two things, that you're providing that great care, but also that you've got really good content out there. And that's articles. It's testimonials from satisfied clients or patients. It's how-to videos. There's such a variety of tools that we can use to make sure that, first of all, people find the kind of organization they're looking for, find the services they need, and can get a really good overview of who you are without one unhappy person really kind of tilting you know, the odds against us.
And that's an interesting point from a consumer's perspective too, because you know, like you said, it's human nature to gravitate toward the negative, and so it's important to kind of, in the same way, look for the positive. And then, you know, kind of, I know when I read a negative review on a restaurant, I'm looking for the reason why they wrote that review. Because, you know, a lot of times, typically when I'm looking for a restaurant, we're out of town, we're on vacation, and we may not know the area. And sifting through the gazillions of restaurant listings, you know, I mean, you only have so many nights out with your family, and you don't want to waste your money, you don't want to waste your time, you don't want to eat bad food. But there's not a restaurant out there with more than, you know, 20 reviews that doesn't have at least one bad one. And so I think it's important to note that when you read those negative reviews, you know, try to understand if there's kind of some sour grapes going on there, or, you know, if there's truly something to watch out for. And, you know, obviously multiples of negative reviews are going to be an indication. But on the flip side, you know, looking at the positive reviews, how do you discover what's the meat and you know, what's the whipped cream when you look at these reviews? In the same way, you know, you know that some of the stuff that's out there is put there by a company, and, you know, so how do you kind of sift through to find the real message?
Right, and that's a great question, and there's a couple things that you actually touched on, and one is the number of reviews. So it's just human nature. We have a bad experience, we get mad, and we tell the whole world. And now people are telling the whole world on their social media and on, you know, review sites that are specifically out there. We don't always think to do that when we have a good experience because we have expectations of a good experience. So part of a company's responsibility is to actually ask people who are happy to give them a review. If you had a good experience, please help out with that. But the other side of that, if you see a restaurant and half the reviews are negative, that's, for me, pretty much a red flag, especially if there's just a lot of reviews out there. The occasional disgruntled employee or somebody who's just kind of mad at the whole world. So if I see a bunch of reviews and testimonials and I see one negative one, I really tend to discount that as a consumer. And I think most people realize that one person, that's one person's opinion when there's, you know, outweighed by all these other people saying really positive things. The challenge that companies have is that they don't actively ask people for their opinion. And when you do that, I think most companies giving good service will be very pleasantly surprised at the response.
Excellent. So let's kind of shift the conversation a bit. So if you're a service provider out there, what are the avenues that are available to get your message out? What are the tools that are available?
Right. Well, there's numerous tools. I'm going to just focus on a couple. And the good news for anybody listening is that I'm going to focus on those tools that are free so that you're not looking at having to break the bank to get some presence online. The first one is Google. Google is the number one website in the U.S. I think actually it might be the number one in the world. So you need to have your business connected to Google's entire suite of services. And it just starts with getting a Gmail account. You don't ever have to use it for anything, but once you have that account, you can then set up a profile. And when you do this, it's important that you're going to have your own personal profile, and if you're the business owner, you'll probably be the one with the business profile. If not, having a separate profile for the business is kind of critical. And what that does is it gives you the opportunity to reach out to clients, to prospects, to people who are shopping, and put in really important, useful information. It also lets people, it gives people an avenue to go in and write that review. Because without it, you won't show up. And if you're not sure, how your Google listing looks, there's two places to go. One, of course, is the G+, the Google Plus. But the other is every business with a business address, Google has them listed somewhere, and it's called Google Places. And when you claim your listing, if you've ever done a search for a type of company, I need home care in Atlanta, you'll see all these companies that come up. When you claim your place, your company will then start coming up in Google Places. So that would be the first start is to get, and again, both of these things are absolutely free. Right along with that, Google, so we know that's the number one search engine. What people don't realize is that the number one how-to search engine is YouTube. And more frequently, we are going to video. So if you're trying to do something, if I have a recipe to make something, 9 times out of 10, if I want to see how it's done, or I'm working in my garden and I want to see what something's supposed to look like, I'll go right into YouTube and say, you know, how to grow tomatoes or how to bake a pound cake or whatever it happens to be that I'm doing. And so having that account with Google, which again is free, and I don't work for Google, lets you set up a YouTube account. And at that point, you have this incredible tool at your disposal where you can actually put in how-to videos, tips. I always look for what I call teaching moments. If there's a nurse who can talk maybe about the importance of getting a flu shot or a shingles shot, and maybe you're in a day center who does that kind of a service, these are places that you can actually put information your prospect will actually want to see and want to use. And the old paradigm was that you just optimize your website. And that's good. You should still do that. But the problem is if you're looking, suppose it's adult day centers in Atlanta, and you put that search in when your website's optimized for that keyword, well, people will find you, and of course they find your competitors. What people don't realize is that the way Google's algorithms work is that they like to have kind of like a multimedia results come up. So they want to give you some shopping results, some articles, some video, and then those websites. So if you have video optimized with those same keywords, all of a sudden, instead of just seeing the Google search and a couple websites, people can now find really informative articles that they can actually use, or videos that will teach them something that's really important and, of course, relevant to your business.
Hmm.
I know that was a lot of information. I know I gave it really fast. I'll stop and breathe for a minute in case you had a question before I move on.
Sam, are you still alive?
Yeah, you know what I'm thinking about, Brad. It's exactly what we were talking yesterday about our new initiative. So I think Fiona, you're converting me to a point where I've got to sit down and find someone who can teach me about social media.
So I think when you look at the social media options, you know, I think just about everybody's on Facebook now. Maybe not everybody, but you know, a lot of adults. LinkedIn seems to be more business to business. You talked about Google. What are there are some other mediums out there. There's Twitter and there's Pinterest in particular that we've talked about prior to the show. Talk a little bit about those. Who's using them? How are they being used? Is it important for senior services companies to jump on those bandwagons as well?
Yeah, and that's so there's an upside and a downside to social media. And you know, you're right. Facebook is definitely, if you have a business-to-consumer service, and anybody who's involved in services to older adults, that's generally what it is. Facebook is where those prospects will be. That's the upside. The downside is if you think about what you do on Facebook personally, and as marketers and marketers within companies, we all have this tendency to want to push information out. And the information gets pushed out in a way that here's what I want you to know as the prospect. But that's really different sometimes from what the prospect wants to know. And also where they're going to find it. So for the most part, if I'm on Facebook, I'm catching up on what family and friends are doing. I'm looking at photos, and I don't really want to see ads. I know they're in there, but unless they're relevant, I'm probably not paying as much attention to them. Now, that all changes if somebody has something on Facebook or any of these other social media platforms that is of interest to me. So the key always comes back to your content. What is it that you're writing? And one of the tips that I give to some of my clients is to, so we, in marketing, we talk about targeting, you know, and segmenting the market. Most people don't go far enough. What you really want to do is if you have one or two or three different groups of people who are buying your service, so maybe mother or daughters of aging parents, that's one group. You want to take that and really kind of drill it down in your mind. Do it as an exercise in your office or your center and say, okay, let's create, they call it an avatar, but let's create this person. What's her name? How old is she? What does she do for a living? How many kids does she have? Where does she live? How much money does she make? And you really start to create this profile so that in your mind, she becomes a real person. And then when you write your content, think about what you would say if you were having a conversation with her. What is it that she's looking for? What is it that she's interested in? And when you do that, you find that you do less salesy type stuff and more really good content that people can use. And the key to good content is that you put stuff out there, whether people use your service or not, it doesn't matter. You just put your best stuff out there because that's what will really showcase you as an expert. And the flip side of that, if you are looking for whatever service and you see articles that resonate with you, not only are you going to read them, but you're going to follow, and you're going to continue to get more information and more updates because people are interested. So we have this tendency to push. What we really need to do is just put lots and lots of great stuff out there and then occasionally say, by the way, don't forget that we're here, or put that coupon or put that sales message. But I would say like 85% of it has to be stuff people can use. And that's how you get noticed. So your content starts with your blog, which are your articles. You can repurpose them, recycle them, and turn them into videos, break them into smaller videos, and then your social media platform is the vehicle that you use to get that message out to people. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that's great. How about some tips on, you know, common mistakes? Like, I'll tell you one thing that completely turns me off, and I will never click on any of these videos, is if they have the tagline, and just wait till you see what happens next. That just irritates me. But
yeah,
what are some other...
5-minute video.
Right.
Well, definitely keeping it short. I would say definitely under 5 minutes and under 2 if you can make it under 2 minutes. So suppose you want to give somebody 7 tips, you know, or the 7 things nobody tells you about recovering from an illness. You make those 7 tips as seven separate videos because we don't have long attention spans as a culture anymore. And, you know, my joke is always, if it's under 140 characters, which is Twitter's limit, we're not going to read it. And, you know, people will watch a video before they read something. So one mistake would be making it too long, too boring, and too salesy. The other thing is that you want to have pictures. If it's not a video, make sure there's a picture. Our eye is attracted to pictures. And keep those images positive. I always think back to the companies that we're dealing with a population where it's our parents and our grandparents. And in most cultures, those people are treated with absolute respect. And so while we sometimes get into situations that are, you know, if you don't laugh, you'll cry, humor needs to be used very, very cautiously because we never want to poke fun at our client or be perceived as poking fun at our client. I mean, that's just the absolute number one way to get people to turn you off.
Yeah, I kind of feel like humor should be left to the professionals.
Exactly. And unless you are a stand-up comic, I really keep away from it. Because what you think is funny could really offend somebody else. Likewise, with your own profiles, if you're, and this is in particular for not just business owners, but people who are the face of their business. So if you are the outreach consultant for a company, you need to make sure your own profiles are nice and clean and there's nothing on there that you don't want showing up on the 6 o'clock news. Now, that doesn't mean you can't share a joke with family members, but you make sure you keep your settings turned to private and that anything that goes public, my golden rule is, again, I don't want to be known as, there's never any alcohol, swearing, partying, inappropriate comments, no religion, no politics, nothing. It's clean as a whistle profile. And you can still get your personality through, but you want to make sure that everybody who sees you is making a judgment. And whether you agree with that judgment is or not, it doesn't really matter. So kind of keeping a blank slate, you want some personality in there. But one of the things that turns me off is when, some people are just constantly posting their political and religious views. And sometimes I agree, sometimes I don't. But I just don't think if you're doing that in conjunction with a business that it's appropriate.
Yeah, I certainly think that personal and corporate or business profiles should be entirely separate. And, for us, I think it's important to have a business Facebook page that is not linked to my personal Facebook page. And frankly, I'm not big on personal Facebook usage anyway. It's, to me, it goes out there and it stays there forever. It's something I've told my children many times. Mm-hmm. If you think that a future employer is not going to look at your Facebook page, you're just naive. And
right. So,
you know, don't say anything on Facebook or Twitter or anything else that you wouldn't want to be broadly published. And that, you know, supposedly these newer, some of these newer apps like Snapchat, you know, they go off into the ether, but I got to be honest with you, I don't believe it.
Yeah, I just came across that one. I have a 13-year-old niece, and, you know, my sister kind of keeps her off of Facebook and you know, anything that could lead her down the wrong path in her mind. And that Snapchat, apparently they post and it goes away, but we don't know. And they just released something yesterday that I guess Facebook has been doing some research into how people respond to posts. So they've been waiting some of the posts, but some people have been getting more negative posts than positive and some of the other side. And of course, there's this huge uproar in the social media world about it. Some people think it's a great study. Other people are offended. And really, that's the key. So something that some people think is wonderful, somebody will be offended. By all means, have your Facebook pages, enjoy them, put pictures of yourself on vacation or skiing or after dinner with friends. I've got some stuff on mine. I was building an igloo with my husband last year. Totally harmless fun. The reason I'm careful, though, is because my name is so closely linked to the name of my business.
Right.
People who know Fairfield Business Solutions, that's Fiona F. Middleton. It's one and the same. So I'm really being naive if I don't think that people will limit their searches to my business.
Right.
If somebody who wants to hire me, they're going to search, and they're going to search my name. So taking as much care with your own personal brand as you do with your business brand is critical.
Well, yeah, absolutely important point there, because it is true. People are going, you know, and particularly if you're in a service business, people want to know who they're dealing with. And that's actually, you know, a point to be made on the other side of this thing. If you're the consumer, don't limit your search to the business, but you know, go ahead. If you know the owner, if you know the principals, you know, go look at their LinkedIn profile, go look at their Facebook page, and you're going to see the kind of person you're doing business with.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm to the point now, before I go to a meeting, so, you know, in networking, we run into people at networking organizations, and somebody's bound to say, well, let's go get a cup of coffee and see if we can help each other's business. Before I schedule that, I go do a search. And if I see something that's not professional, I generally won't take the meeting. Because, you know, your brand is, especially today, and I could talk for hours about people whose brands have been really damaged or destroyed, just because they weren't vigilant about protection.
So we are, this time has slipped away, and we've got to wrap this up. But before I ask you for a tip for our listening audience, let me just, one other question. You know, you talk about that negative brand that might develop. If that happens to somebody, you know, and it could be, you know, through a mistake, or it could be through something that is actually not the business owner's fault. But if that happens and there starts to, you know, a negative brand starts to develop, what can a company do to counteract that?
Right. The first thing is to look at the service they're providing and make sure there is not a real actual service issue. The second thing, and this is, it's to be proactive. Get stuff out there before something negative goes. And again, that's that firewall that you build. If something negative comes up, so if you get a bad review, I wouldn't take it down, but you do want to respond to it immediately. And you want to make sure that your response is appropriate, and that you know never get into an argument with a customer on Facebook about something. Apologize if it's necessary, and make sure that you continue to generate more and more positive content. And again, if there's a service issue, obviously that has to get cleaned up first.
Yeah, it's a great point, and I've seen you know, looking at sites like HomeAway or VRBO, if you're going to rent a vacation house, I've seen people do that pretty effectively. So, you know, somebody says, didn't have a great experience in your home, it was dirty when I got there, or the washing machine was broken or whatever, and I've seen owners come on and respond, not just to the good reviews, but to the bad ones as well, and say, you know, I'm sorry you had this experience. After you left, we replaced the washer and dryer, and we've hired a new cleaning company or whatever. But that you're right. That goes a long way to at least giving the possibility that somebody's going to consider that service again, you know, because at least they're seeing that, you know, I mean, maybe after a negative review, you might have a better chance of getting a good experience because, you know, an astute owner will have gone out and made proper changes to their business. So.
Right. And plus, if your clients are engaging on social media, sometimes one person, if it's really an unfounded negative review, your own clients and will jump in and also respond with their positive experiences. And that happens all by itself. But that's, again, another discussion, another conversation, because I know we're getting low on time.
Excellent. So let's, for listeners, you know, maybe you can answer this in two ways, but you know, for those that are trying to cut through the clutter as they try to get a message out about a valuable service that they're providing, you know, what's the first thing they ought to be looking at? You know, what's that first nugget of wisdom for them? You know, and then in the same way, for those that are trying to identify service for themselves, what is that? What should they be looking for first in terms of picking the best vendor for their needs?
Right. So from the vendor's perspective, and I think I did touch on this, but not just put your best content out there and information that's going to be really important to the person using it, but try to be a little different, a little cutting edge, have something new, or take a slightly different approach. Because if everybody's saying one thing and you say something a little bit different, it is definitely going to get you noticed. From the consumer's standpoint, again, if you see a negative review, I look for the responsiveness. Did the owner get in there and say something? Was it done in a timely manner? Are there other good positive reviews that are balancing that one negative one? And just really take a look a little bit deeper than that just first hit.
Excellent. All right. I Fiona, we appreciate the time you've taken with us this morning, and I knew that the time would slip away, and there are so many things that we could talk about, and we had hoped that we would have an opportunity to chat about the changing landscape in the senior services environment with respect to legislation and regulatory changes. We didn't get to that, and so we'd love to invite you back and maybe have an entire show that's kind of focused on that. In the meantime, Sam, since you're so quiet, I'm just going to usurp your authority and close the show. So, Fiona, for those that might want to reach out to you and find out more about Fairfield Business Solutions, how would they do that?
So the fastest way is probably just to send an email, and that's to F Middleton, that's F like Fox, MIDDLETON, at fairfieldsolutions.com, or they can go right to the site, which is www.fairfieldsolutions.com, and then I have all my phone and contact information. And, you know, I actually have a video out there on using YouTube. If anybody's interested, I'd be happy to give them access to that at no charge, just complimentary, or even do a little consult over the phone.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, again, Fiona, thank you for being with us. For our listeners, thank you for tuning in. We will be back again next week on the same day and the same time. And for those who have missed the show, they can always listen at www.ugeriaradio.com. And it just occurs to me as I'm saying this, if you miss the show, you're not hearing me saying this, so I'm not sure why we say it, but there you go. And as we always close the show, if the youth of our nation are its greatest national resource, then it stands to reason that the seniors of our nation are its greatest national treasure. Thank you, and God bless.
Eugeria Radio is sponsored by Griswold Special Care and broadcast live from the Business Radio X studios.